We have an incredible future awaiting for us if you're a part of the family of God through Jesus Christ. An incredible future. There is given to us by God in a very merciful way the hard news, and that is the culmination of world history and wickedness being put finally in its place. We're walking through the book of Revelation right now. We're in chapter 13. Please don't turn there. Chapter 13, let me just tell you, opens up with this vision of this second beast coming up out of the sea. And this second beast received its power and authority and throne from the first one that is identified as Satan himself. Satan empowering the second one. The second one is going to move on into chapter 13 of having a third beast called to start with, and then later on in the Revelation it's called the false prophet. That has led us back into the book of Daniel. We've been several weeks back there. We're going back there again in order to, I believe, have Revelation 13 and following make a bit more sense, because Daniel, although Daniel was quite a distance before Jesus was even born, wrote somewhere in the neighborhood of 530 or so B.C., he wrote things that help us, it fills in the picture of what John later saw in the book of Revelation. So please turn to Daniel. We will be in chapter 9 this morning. We've peeked into chapter 7 and chapter 8. Daniel spends some amazing time in prayer. You know, I have wondered at times, what is it that Jesus said or thought when he spent all night in prayer? Man, what was that like? Reading Daniel 9 is not an all-nighter, but it might as well be. It is so potent, so packed. I would encourage you, if you haven't read it or haven't read it for a while, indulge yourself in Daniel chapter 9 in a personal sort of way. Personalize the letter. It's a letter of confession of the sin of his nation. We've got plenty to confess as far as sin of our nation. But Daniel said he was confessing his own sin as well. We're just not told in the scripture what that was. So use that moment. Use that time. We're not going to be looking at the prayer right now, but rather at the end of that prayer to suit our purposes. So Daniel had been praying through verse 19. Verse 20, now while I was speaking and praying and confessing my sin and the sin of my people Israel and presenting my supplication before the Lord my God in behalf of the holy mountain of God. That's over there, and he is right here. He is in part of Babylon near the Tigris River, and Jerusalem lay desolate over there. He was searching the scriptures to see how long they had to be in captivity. Reading the book of Jeremiah, it said 70 years. He took God at his word and prayed. Lord, it's time. But the prayer wasn't just that simple. Oh, God, go fix it. It was, Lord, there's sin that has developed this whole thing. And so he was confessing that. Searching the book of Jeremiah, he found that, and then he prayed that way. Verse 21, while I was still speaking in prayer, this is an experience I've never had, the man Gabriel, called a man here only in the form of a man is the reason he is one of the angelic beings. Gabriel, whom I had seen in the vision previously, came to me in my extreme weariness about the time of the evening offering. He gave me instruction and talked with me and said, oh, Daniel, I have now come forth to give you insight with understanding. At the beginning of your supplications, the command was issued, and I have come to tell you, for you are highly esteemed, desirable, or precious. So give heed to the message and gain understanding of the vision. Last week, Daniel chapter 8, we looked at the Antichrist. He's seen in chapter 7. He's seen in chapter 8. He'll be seen again in chapter 10. He is seen in the book of Revelation. Each one of these visions that Daniel has kind of piles up a little bit more as I see it. A little bit more. Last week, we looked at what he, the Antichrist, was going to accomplish and some suggestions out as to how he will accomplish them. What was the main suggestion that you might remember? How the Antichrist is going to accomplish his deeds from last week. I'm sorry? Okay, but how? What's the methodology?
Corruption.
Deception. The word corrupt is translated in most of our Bibles into the word destroy, but that Hebrew word is not typically destroy. It is to corrupt, which is destructive. He is going to trick them. He's going to corrupt them while they're at ease, while they're at peace. They're not running from his bullets. They're at this place of all is going well. And he's going to use his intrigue, ambiguous speech to corrupt them. Well, this morning, Daniel chapter 9, verses 24 and following is not about Antichrist so much as about God and what God will accomplish and when. This timing, we're going to unfold it a bit more next week, and I hope you don't miss the details of this. Pretty interesting. The timing is limited. This timing that's in chapter 9 has to do with leading up to Messiah, precisely when he would be here on this earth and be cut off. The language itself is little Hebrew imagery, Hebrew poetic. Verse 24, 70 weeks. It's not the word for a week that's made up of days. That is used in chapter 10. Look at verses 2 and 3 of chapter 10. In those days, I, Daniel, had been mourning for 3 entire weeks, and it's literally 3 sevens of days. A collection of 7 days, that's a week. Here in chapter 9, 70 weeks, in a lot of our thinking, we think of decades. Right, I think back. Okay, I've been here 3.3 decades pastoring in Tacoma. I don't think in groups of 7, but the Hebrews thought in groups of 7, right? Seventh day and so forth. A lot of sevens to be brought out here. But the 70 weeks, these are units of 7. And it has to be from what Daniel is talking about in his very context, groups of 7 years. 70 units of 7 years would be 490 years. 70 weeks have been decreed for your people. This is not world history, though it affects world history. This is Israel, your people. 70 weeks for your people and your holy city to do 6 things. To finish the transgression, Christ is the answer to that. To make an end of sin, Christ is the answer to that. To make atonement for iniquity, Christ is the answer for that. And to bring in everlasting righteousness, Christ is the answer. To seal up vision or to finish vision and prophecy. Christ is the fulfillment of that and will fulfill it to the letter. And to anoint the most holy place. Most of our Bibles that use certain tools, that of italics, for instance, has the word place in italics because it's not there. It could be to anoint the most holy one. Who is, in fact, Christ that we see in the book of Revelation, being anointed, receiving the kingdom, and so forth, in chapter 12. Verse 25. So you are to know and discern that from the issuing of a decree to restore and rebuild Jerusalem until the Messiah, the Prince, there will be 7 units of 7 and then 62 units of 7 divided up because the first unit, 49 years, Not quite sure exactly what he meant by that, but it's to be divided that way. And some have guessed it would take that long to rebuild the walls of Jerusalem. It took 52 days to put the stones in place. How long did it take to move all the rubble and build all the interior? We don't know. It's speculation. There's some good suggestions for that. Seven units of seven, that would be 49 years, plus the 62 units of seven. A total of 69 of the 70 years becomes important in the next verse. Oh, by the way, I thought it was wise to read this. There were four decrees from this period of time about the rebuilding. Decree number one, Cyrus gave, 538 BC, and you can read about it in Ezra 1, the first four verses, and chapter 5. But it was to rebuild the temple. Decree number two, Darius the First in 512 BC, Ezra 6, 1 to 12 talk about that. And it was a confirmation of the first decree about rebuilding the temple. Third decree, Artaxerxes Longimanus, how do I pronounce that, guys? Help me out. I don't know how to pronounce the identification of which Artaxerxes. 457 BC, you can read about that in Ezra chapter 7, verses 1 to 26. And it's about rebuilding the temple. What does this say? 70 weeks have been decreed for you and your people for your holy city. Verse 25. So you are to know from the issuing of a decree to restore and rebuild not the temple but Jerusalem. There's a distinction here. There was a fourth decree by the same Artaxerxes, March 5th, 444 BC, to rebuild Jerusalem. You can read about that in Nehemiah chapter 2, first eight verses. Four decrees, it was the last one that was this. So you are to know and discern that from the issuing of the decree to restore and rebuild Jerusalem until Messiah the Prince, there will be seven units of seven and 62 units of seven for it to be built with plaza and trench in times of distress. And certainly they had that. There was a point in time where you can start counting. Tick, 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 tick. Down to the very time, I believe, it's indicated here of the triumphal entry and the cutting off of Messiah. Verse 26, then after the 62 weeks, the seven has already come and gone. Now the 62 weeks, and before the 70th week. This is something that I think may be easily overlooked. After the 60, let's put it together, the 69 weeks in total, there's going to be an interlude. At the end of the interlude, we're going to see the 70th week come in. There's an interlude that happens. So after the 62 weeks, the Messiah will be cut off and have nothing. His death here, he did not receive a kingdom here. That's in the future. That's going to happen, and he's building his kingdom, and it's a different sort of kingdom. We're talking a kingdom that is earthly, a kingdom where he's ruling with that rod of iron as described in Old Testament and New Testament, the book of Revelation. But he's going to be cut off. Tick, 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 tick. Doing the math, by those that are better at math than me, it comes out to be March of 33 A.D., the Passover of 33 A.D., the Messiah is cut off. But that he died then brings in what the previous verse had said, to finish the transgressions, to make an end of sin, make atonement for iniquity, to bring in everlasting righteousness, seal up vision and prophecy, and to anoint the most holy place. We've got a time period that Daniel gives us, pretty exact, that really did happen in history. Then after the 62 weeks, the Messiah will be cut off and have nothing. And the people of the prince who is to come will destroy the city. They did that in 70 AD and the sanctuary, 70 AD. And its end will come with a flood. Even to the end, there will be war. Desolations are determined. Then the prince who is to come, mentioned in verse 26, is the he in verse 27. And he will make a firm covenant with the many for that 1 week, that set of seven years. We have been calling that the seven-year tribulation. It's not new from any one of us. That is what it has been labeled for a long, long time. We've been pointing out the very wording in the next verse over and over again in the scriptures. In the middle of the week, what's the very middle of 7 years? 3.5. And it's worded by the count of days in the book of Revelation and in the book of Daniel. It's worded as a 3.5 years. It's a time period. He's going to make a firm covenant with the many. Not with just many, but the many. It's a specific group. It is going to be with the Israel community, I believe. And that firm covenant has to do with them worshiping their God in an orthodox way in their temple in Jerusalem. We've been building that from various other scriptures leading up to this point. But in the middle of that seven-year period that we call the tribulation, that I believe the last half is what Revelation unfolds, not the first half. All of the desolations, the awful things that this one is going to do, and people are going to be sucked into his game. At the end of that 3.5 years, he will put a stop to sacrifice and grain offerings. So they can't atone for their sin and their thinking by their sacrifice or give God gifts. No more of that. On the wing of abominations will come one who makes desolate, even until a complete destruction, one that is decreed, is poured out on the one who makes this desolate. What's interesting in Daniel, three different places he refers to this one and gives a brief obituary each time. Very brief obituary. He's going to be taken out, yet not by human agency. Right here is the next one, and then there's one in following chapters. He will get his end. I like that encouragement. You know, that gives me just a little bit of wind back in my sails, so I'm not so worried and chewing my nails about what's going on in world history and what's going to come and what do I have to experience. I don't know. I haven't been there yet, but I can trust God. He will take care of this ultimate enemy that we know of as the Antichrist. The firm covenant, apparently non-ending until he breaks it in the middle. Covenant of peace, a covenant of freedom of religion, and probably freedom in general. A covenant that brings prosperity. Just think of Jerusalem living in peace. They haven't ever been there. But I've got quite a list of prophecies that are yet to be fulfilled. And one of those is that they will sit. David Hodges and I were chatting this last week. Sit under their own vine. They will be eating of the fruit that they plant in unwalled cities. They will be protected. They haven't experienced that yet, but they will. This one is promising them that. They're going to go into this covenant saying, yeah, the times are here. This is excellent for 3.5 years. The breaking of that covenant in the middle of the week, a complete end of their spiritual practice, their religious practice, their way to serve and get to know God, a complete end of that, and then major desolation. I would like to read on the heels of this little paragraph chapter 10. Not going to teach through chapter 10, but there's some things in chapter 10 that put some, context, some of the feeling that Daniel went through and so forth as these visions are happening. In the third year of Cyrus, king of Persia, a message was revealed to Daniel, whose name was Belteshazzar. The message was true and one of great conflict, but he understood the message and had an understanding of the vision. Chapter 10, verse 2. In those days, I, Daniel, had been mourning for 3 entire weeks, 3 sets of 7 days. I did not eat and taste any tasty food, nor did meat or wine enter my mouth, nor did I use any ointment at all until the entire three weeks, were completed. Why would he be mourning? He'd been praying about the sin of Israel. He'd been praying for the restoration of Jerusalem, for the return from the captivity. And it's shown him what's going to happen in the end. What a reason for going into mourning. Verse 4, and on the 24th day of the first month, while I was by the bank of the great river, that is the Tigris, I lifted my eyes and looked, and behold, there was a certain man dressed in linen, whose waist was girded with a belt of pure gold of Uphaz. His body was like the beryl. His face had the appearance of lightning. His eyes were like flaming torches, his arms and feet like the gleam of polished bronze, the sound of his words like the sound of tumult. Now I, Daniel, alone saw the vision. While the men who were with me did not see the vision, nevertheless, a great dread fell upon them, and they ran away to hide themselves. I've had minor experiences, and they can only be minor, nothing like this. Whereas I enter a certain environment, and all of a sudden it's like I'm stepping into darkness. I'm stepping into something that is not right. It is wickedness. It is evil. It is vile. I can't see it. But something is very, very wrong. That's what these other men must have experienced. As Daniel said, I saw it. They didn't. They just felt a dread. Something is coming on them like they're in the presence of something they want to run away from. I was left alone and saw this great vision. Verse 9, but I heard the sounds of his words. And as soon as I heard the sound of his words, I fell into a deep sleep on my face, with my face to the ground. Then behold, a hand touched me and set me trembling on my hands and knees. He said to me, Daniel, O Daniel, man of high esteem, understand the words that I'm about to tell you and stand upright. For I have now been sent to you. And when he had spoken this word to me, I stood up trembling. And then he said to me, do not be afraid, Daniel, for from the first day that you set your heart on understanding this and on humbling yourself before God, your words were heard the very first day. I mean, there's something for me to listen to right there. You mean I don't have to talk louder for God to hear me? I don't have to use more words and specialized spirituality. I was heard from the first moment I began. I've been sent to you. And when he had spoken this word to me, I stood up trembling. Then he said to me, do not be afraid, Daniel, for from the first day that you set your heart on understanding this, on humbling yourself before your God, your words were heard, and I've come in response to your words. But the prince of the kingdom of Persia was withstanding me for 21 days, which happens to equal 3 weeks from verse 2. Something's going on here. I was sent to you 21 days ago. Your prayer was heard, and it may be that I was sent then and couldn't get to you because the prince of Persia was withstanding me for 21 days. Then behold, Michael, one of the chief princes, came to help me, for I had been left there with the kings of Persia. It's like this one named Gabriel is feeling rather helpless at this point in time, but explaining to Daniel, there's something going on out there. There's been a fight happening, and you got to know it. Revelation chapter 12, what do we see? We see this war, we'll call it, in heaven. We see this aggression between Satan and his henchmen, and God with his angelic beings, and Satan was not strong enough to withstand them and was thrown down to the earth. That's what Revelation 12 tells us. At some point in time, there's not going to be any longer that conflict there, according to chapter 12. But that conflict was what was going on here. What is that like? I mean, my brain, I mean, we can be creative and we'll probably be wrong. Okay? That kind of a conflict that he was telling Daniel brings something else to mind, though. We know of the prince of Persia. We know of the prince of Greece. And then at the end of this chapter, look at this, last verse. However, I will tell you what is inscribed in the writing of truth. Yet there is no one who stands firmly with me against these forces except Michael, your prince. We call him Michael the Archangel because he's one of the chief princes. But he's labeled here. It's designated. Michael is the prince over Israel. Okay, we got a prince over Persia. And that's an enemy of Israel. We have a prince over Greece. They're enemies of each other. We read about that in chapter 8. We're going to read about it again next week, God willing, in chapter 11. Is there a prince of the USA? Is there a prince of China? Is there a prince of Russia? Are they adversarial to God? I think those are valid questions to ask. God does not unfold a lot of this to us. Last hour, I read Ephesians chapter 6, verses 10 down through 19, that talks about spiritual armor of God. In our finite, limited perspective, we think that the enemy is this person or this circumstance or this disease. And God tells us very plainly there, your battle is not with flesh and blood. There's something else going on that you cannot contend with. But that God, in fact, has given us his armor. Looking through those six pieces of that armor, it is what Jesus is to us as our protector. We are in a battle and we've got our eyes out here thinking the enemy is over here somewhere. And you're not going to be tough enough and strong enough to stand against this one. Stand firm in the armor of God. And then he unfolds that to us. If this kind of battle is going on in the heavenly places, in fact, I do want to read one verse from Ephesians 6. If you would hold your hand here, we're coming back to chapter 10. But Ephesians 6, the description, verse 12. Now, start at verse 10. Finally, be strong in the Lord and in the strength of his might. Typically, that's because we have none left. Yet we can stand strong because of who he is. Put on the full armor of God that you may be able to stand firm against the schemes of the devil. And he's going to come up with schemes, not that are going to fail on you. He's going to look for the ones that are going to work on you. Standing fast in the armor of God is your hope. For our struggle is not against flesh and blood. This is why I turned here, but against rulers. Prince of Persia, prince of Greece, and they don't go old and die. They don't get reelected or elected out. These are there, and they're permanent, and they're happening according to what I'm reading in Daniel, and I take it by faith. rulers, against the powers, against the world forces of this darkness, this vileness, this wickedness, this evil that we, it corrupts, it comes into our very home. There's an author that has purpose that is behind all of that. The one that is behind the wickedness, the spiritual forces of wickedness in the heavenlies or in the heavenly places. Hallelujah for Revelation chapter 12 that says one day they will be cast out of the heavenlies. But woe to those who dwell on the earth, because he's going to be here and he knows his time is short and he's going to be swinging his stuff, man. Woe to those that are here. Okay, this all fits together. This is all tied into what is going on to let us know that our battle is there, not here, and maybe that's going to change our prayer. I want you to notice this. Gabriel did not come to Daniel because Daniel said, God, send an angel, I need his help. Gabriel was sent to him as he humbled himself and just prayed out what was to be prayed. I believe that we are not saying, oh, God, help me, give me your guardian angel, da-da-da-da-da. No, but as we humble ourselves under the mighty hand of God, he is doing something in that realm that I don't even have to see. I trust him. He's got our best interest in mind, and he's got his glory in mind. Humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God that he may exalt you at the proper time. That's putting us in a place where he has us fully to himself. There's something going on there. Let's go back to Daniel 10. The prince of Persia withstood me, Gabriel is saying. Verse 14. Now I have come to give you an understanding of what will happen to your people in the latter days. Your people, that's Israel. In the end of the days. For the vision pertains to the days yet in the future. And he's going to start unfolding in the next chapter the last 3.5 years of that tribulation time. And when he had spoken to me according to these words, I turned my face toward the ground and became speechless. Behold, one who resembled a human being was touching my lips. Then I opened my mouth and spoke and said to him who was standing before me, O my Lord, Adonai, sir, boss, one that's greater than me, and I'm really scared right now. O my Lord, as a result of the vision, anguish has come upon me, and I have retained no strength. For how can such a servant himself of my Lord talk with such a one as my Lord? As for me, there remains just now no strength in me, nor has my breath been left in me. Daniel's kind of in a fix here, but he's able to speak out that his circumstance. Then this one with human appearance touched me again and strengthened me, and he said, O man of high esteem, do not be afraid. Which I don't think was trying to educate him. He was blessing him with God's strength. Do not be afraid. Peace be with you. Like Jesus' words. When Jesus said words like that, it was pronouncing peace on them. It wasn't just, hey, it'll be okay. Calm down for a minute. His peace on them. Take courage and be courageous. Now, as soon as he spoke to me, I received strength and said, may my Lord speak, for you have strengthened me. Now he's able to even listen. Then he said, do you understand why I came to you? Or know why I came to you. But I shall now return to fight against the prince of Persia. So I am going forth, and behold, the prince of Greece is about to come. The prince of Persia used certain kings. We read about them last week. The prince of Greece used, first of all, Alexander the Great, and then divided his kingdom up by four. Next week, we're going to detail that out some more. Pretty interesting to me to see how Daniel just unfolds that exactly before it ever happened. However, I will, and the other thing I wanted to mention from verse 20, I'm sorry, is that fight must still be going on. an ongoing, whatever kind of battle these entities have. But one day, it's going to be enough, and God says, now's the time, and they will be undone and thrown to this earth. The beast and the false prophet put in that place of fire and brimstone, according to Revelation. Satan held for 1,000 years, chained, released for a short time, and then he too will be put in that place where death and hell will also be placed. That's their end. That's the demise. But for the people of God, read Revelation 19, 20, 21. It's fantastic. Daniel has some ideas about that too. Verse 21. However, I will tell you what is inscribed in the writing of truth. Inscribed in the writing before it was written with a scribe or inscript. It's established in heaven forever, O Lord, thy word is established. This is going to happen. Yet there is no one who stands firmly with me against these forces except Michael, your prince. If you have an eraser, erase the words, please, from your Bible that say chapter 11. It's legal. Don't really do that. What I'm saying is, through quotation marks, continue into the next verse. The same one is still talking. He says, this is not Daniel, and in the first year of Darius the Mede, I arose to be an encouragement and a protection for him. This is not Daniel. This is this angelic being. Search it out. We really don't have much of an indicator that Darius had fallen on his face before the living God and come to know him. But God was using Darius the Mede like he used Cyrus. In Isaiah chapter 41, I will raise up my anointed, my servant, Cyrus, 130 years before he was ever born. Mentioned by name, that's pretty cool. But here, this angelic being says, in the first year of Darius the Mede, I arose to be an encouragement and protection for him. Because God was using the Medes and the Persians and the Greeks to accomplish his will. Darius came under attack by some of his own men. End result, they wanted Daniel to be thrown to the lions. Recall that earlier in the book. This angelic being is there to be an encouragement and protection. One of the things that they do to encourage and protect. Man, if a leader of a country is going God's direction, I'm thinking there's this angelic being that's there saying, keep going, keep going, keep going. Encourage and protect. Protect from what? Sometimes from the rest of us people. Sometimes just protect them from the enemy. Who knows? I mean, I can get bigger and bigger in my imagination here. But this one, Gabriel, was even a protector of Darius the Mede. Yet the prince of Persia, and they were aligned, fought against him. What was going on there with Darius? What was happening as the one prince was an enemy, the other prince there to be an encouragement, so that he would accomplish God's purpose and God's will. Man, in one sense, I'd like to see, kind of, Cliff, what you prayed earlier, you know, unzip, fold back that sky just a little bit, or give me the ability to look a little more intensely at that world. And then on the other hand, I think, thank you, God, that it's not peeled back. Because if Daniel felt like this in the presence of a mighty and holy being, what would it be like for us to see this? Utterly terrifying. There'd be no question on our mind left whether we can handle this or not. We couldn't. So, thank you, God, in your wisdom that you've withheld that from me. Verse 2, we're going to finish here real soon. And now I will tell you the truth. Behold, 3 more kings are going to arise in Persia. I'd like to just stop there. It gets into the same context that we've left in chapter 8, the last part of chapter 9, introduces the same thing, but adds more to it. It's like it gets bigger and it gets bigger. I would like to read the words that I've quoted back in Revelation chapter 12. Would you please go there? end our little set this morning on this. God's given us in this reading, chapter 9, chapter 10, some of what he is going to do and the timing, at least the timing of some of it. And if we had certainly a starting date of the beginning of the tribulation, then we could tick, 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 count off 3.5 years. And once this Antichrist comes into his power play and offers an agreement of peace, a covenant of peace and blessing, maybe it's going to become more obvious and we will be able to see whether we're here or not. There's no guarantee. I got some ideas and you might have some ideas. We'll wait and see how that's going to unfold. But there's going to come a time where that clock is ticking. And it's going to be obvious because it's in the book already written. We can look back and see, look what God did. In chapter 12, I wanted to read these verses one more time. Verse 7. And there was war in heaven, written after the fact, in that a lot of the prophecies are before they ever happen. I believe this is yet to happen, as far as I can tell. There was war in heaven, Michael and his angels waging war with the dragon. The dragon and his angels waged war. And they were not strong enough, and there was no longer a place for them in heaven. And the dragon, the great dragon, was thrown down. The serpent of old, who is called the devil and Satan, who deceives the whole world, he was thrown down to the earth, and his angels were thrown down with him. And I heard a loud voice in heaven saying, now the salvation and the power and the kingdom of our God and the authority of his Christ have come. For the accuser of our brethren has been thrown down, who accuses them before our God day and night. And they overcame him because of the blood of the Lamb, because of the word of their testimony, not because their might, not because their wit. And they did not love their life even to death. It seemed like victory with everyone that was killed as a martyr. Seems may appear like victory for the enemy, and it's not. If they're a believer in Jesus, it's deliverance into the kingdom of God. It's deliverance into his very presence. They did not love their life even to death. For this reason, rejoice, O heavens, and you who dwell in them. Woe to the earth and the sea, because the devil has come down to you having great wrath, knowing that he has only a short time. And then the same dragon goes to persecute Israel. We've been there for several months. We've been in this passage. And then this next beast steps onto the scene. Chapter 13, verse 1 and following. It's my plan, God willing, to go into chapter 11 next week. Read it ahead of time, please do. Understand, it seems a little vague until you look at history and see the history fits this schematic so perfectly. I look forward to sharing that with you. Comments, questions? Yes? Chapter 11 in Daniel. Thank you. Sorry for the misspeak there. Interaction? Questions or comments?
Well, I got a question that's kind of deep and probably controversial. We're talking about the seven, or the weeks you were talking about, the 70 weeks. How do we know that they're saying years there besides inference? And the reason I bring it up is because there's a trend in Christianity right now to debunk some of the stories of the Bible for fabrications, or, oh, we don't need to listen to the Old Testament, things like that. Mm-hmm. And even with creationism versus Darwinism and the 7 days that God created the earth, you know, how do we get to stand here as Christians and say, well, this one means 7 weeks, but that means 7 days?
In chapter 10, the words are used, seven units of literal days. He called it 3 weeks and 21 days a little bit later. In this chapter, he could have used the same word and didn't. So it's 7 units of seven. So then we need to go searching and fill the gap. 7 months?
So in the translation, it was literally 7 units of
seven. Yes. Yes, seven. That's our way to understand it. Is the word is, I forget, lapta or something like that. excuse me, but because Daniel has been dealing in chapter 9 with years, 70 years in the captivity, that it's thought that he has brought that same thought forward to units of 7 years, not 7 weeks, months, especially not days, but 7 years. And if we do the math, if it's 7 units of weeks or months, that calculates out to just a couple of years out here, not very long, not long enough for all of this to transpire that was prophesied that would happen. But as we'll look next week, because it gets right into it in chapter 11 right here, it's you're going to see world history before it happened.
And that wasn't what I had in question. It's mainly you're saying in translation of the Greek or
Hebrew.
Mm-hmm. There was a difference between the weeks that they're stating in chapter 10.
Yes.
And the ones.
Yes, the wording is different. The wording is different. Okay, John, go to Terry. You might have something to address this.
Oh, just a quick comment. We were in Israel in 2001, and others may have seen it as well. They have built a menorah. I think stands, what, about 8 or 9 feet tall, I think, and they are building with the intent of reestablishment of the temple someday.
Yeah. It's the intent for often that the bit do it. I mean, I know that's going on. John?
In Daniel chapter 10, verse 4, you made mention of the river in the verse 4 as being the Tigris River.
Mm-hmm.
It says King James is the Hidekel River, which is also mentioned in Genesis 2 in verse 14. So the mention of Genesis 2:14 is also the Tigris River.
You know, I'm not sure. You're shaking your head on that one, Terry.
Because the earth was so radically changed during the flood. So the names came through, but I have no idea how the river...
Where the lay was, yeah. Yeah, and frankly, John, I don't know enough to give you that answer. It's the same reference. Did it lie like this? Now, where it is today would be the westernmost side of what Babylon was, really. But the Medes and the Persians came even further. Persia, in fact, overran the place of Israel, went and attacked some of Greece near Athens. We talked about that last week some. Okay, anybody else?